Welcome to the Classic Cult TV Club, where we watch cult TV from 20 years ago and before. And we're here with Jeanette.
Hi.
Angus.
Hello.
Lisa.
Hi.
Mackenzie.
Hello.
Bella.
Hi.
Alex.
Hey.
And I'm Justin. And we're watching Arrested Development.
Yay.
And I have no idea what Arrested Development
is. Oh,
yes.
Yes. Yeah, you're gonna enjoy yourself, maybe.
So what is Arrested Development,
Alex? Okay,
so
describe it to me. Oh, okay. So the plot is about the Bluth family. The head of the family, the dad of the family, George Bluth, runs a construction company and has been for years using it to supplement his own personal finances. The first episode, he gets arrested for fraud, and he spends most of the first season in prison. And so, as a result, Michael Bluth, one of his sons, the only member of the family who has a brain, a moral compass, and a spine, is now tasked with running the company and making sure his family doesn't implode.
And I think he's been like the second banana the whole way through. Like, the whole life he's been kind of in his dad's shadow, waiting to kind of take the top spot.
And is this animated or is
it is the inverse of Deadly Serious. It has more jokes in a single episode than many shows have in an entire season. It's that dense of comedy. It has so much going on that it's sometimes bizarre. Like, looking over episodes to pick for tonight and realising how much they cram into a single episode, it's almost unbelievable.
Yeah. How long are the episodes like?
Half an hour. But it feels like it's so much in, it's hard to believe it's only half an hour. Yeah, it also goes wildly in terms of comedy as well. It goes from ridiculous wordplay and pun jokes to all the way to satire of George Bush era, World on Terror politics, which is really weird in spots. And some of the jokes have aged terribly. Hopefully there aren't that many in the episodes we're watching tonight. But yeah, it is so dense with comedy.
When was the series made?
03 to 06. So
2003.
Yeah.
And then
it
picked up again.
Yes.
And then
we're going to ignore that.
Yes.
Yeah, because
the last two seasons were not great.
Yeah, it's because part of it was the fact that lost some of the luster because of like a decade between the episodes, and everybody was like, most of the cast had become so famous that trying to get more than two in the same room at the same time was so difficult they couldn't really do it. So they basically couldn't do the same kind of jokes they could before. And it just ended up being not as good. I haven't even seen it, but I've just heard that it's not as good. I probably should, just to be, you know, impartial, to actually say, yes, I have seen the latest episodes. But
so, is it because it's the first three seasons that
we've read?
And so then season four, they brought it out, but the way they edited it was really odd. Like, so they did an episode for each person.
Yeah.
And it's going through the same timeline, and it's just confusing. So a few years back, when Arrested Development came onto Netflix, they actually created a new edit and they took the show and re-edited it so it made more sense. And it actually does make more sense. And then, that was just before then season five came out.
Right.
I maybe got a few episodes in and it was not great.
Yeah.
So.
are there any famous actors in there?
They're all famous, basically.
All famous.
Yeah, basically. None of the entire list
and
of the
a
actors.
A lot of this is before they became
really. Yeah, half the people got famous in this. Like, so we have, I'm going to get this on my phone.
Jeffrey Tambor. I see Liza Minnelli there.
She's a small role. Yeah,
small but essential and memorable. She's fantastic. Lucille too.
Yeah. So basically, the characters are, let me get this in my head. We have Jeffrey Tambor, who plays George, and also his twin brother, Oscar. And we also have Jessica Walter, who plays the mum, Lucille, who's, I think I looked at the Ninaji on the drive down. She's like a martini because she's dry and full of alcohol. There's the four Blue siblings. It's Michael, who's played by Jason Bateman. Portia de Rossi plays his twin sister, Lindsay. His older brother, Joe Bluth, who's played by Will Arnett, who is trying to be he calls them illusions. He's a magician.
Yeah. Magicians do tricks. I'm an illusionist.
Yeah. His younger brother is played by Tony Hale, and he's Buster. And Lindsay's husband, David Cross, who plays Tobias Funke, their kid is played by Alia Shawkat. Her name is Maybe. And it's a little bit of an in-joke about the fact that maybe she's related to being cast, and maybe she's adopted. And the final member is Michael Cera, who plays George Michael, who is Michael's son. Which, if you pay attention,
so there's George Michael,
George Michael,
Job, who's
George Oscar Bluth.
Yeah, which is like George Jr. And then George Michael, who's the son.
It's also because George's twin brother's Oscar, so it's George Oscar Bluth. That's why.
Michael Cera is the only name from that list I recognise.
Yeah,
because I recognise Jason Bateman. I'm thinking Jason Statham. I still have no idea who that
when
is.
When you watch it, there's a lot of a, hey, there's that guy.
Yeah.
That'll be going on. You'll go, oh, that guy. Yeah. Oh, that guy. Oh, yeah. So, like, and this is all before they all became really big names.
Yeah, so
I'm seeing Henry Winkler here.
Yeah, he plays the
lawyer. Right, and he gets replaced by Scott Baio.
Yes, that's a good gag. Yeah. It's like a few subtle nods to the fact that Henry Winkler is playing the family's lawyer. So, like, a few vestiges to the funds. And at one point, he gets arrested, I think. And so he's written out of the show. And he's replaced by the new lawyer played by Scott Baio, who, of course, replaced Henry Winkler in Happy Days.
Yeah.
Who, Scott Baio's character's got the best character name.
His name is Bob Loblaw.
Bob Loblaw, and he has attorney at law.
Yeah, and he runs, of course, the Top Loblaw Law Blog.
Yes! Oh, I love it.
This is the kind of humour part of the humour that the show has. It's like this and other. This is like 10% of the humour. It's just this ridiculous.
And there's a lot of stuff that I found. I watched this show the first three seasons, so many times over the years because there's so much stuff you will miss.
Yeah.
Because there's no laugh track. They don't wait for you to get the joke. It is bang, 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 bang.
Yeah, like I literally, I picked one of the episodes for tonight. We're watching two episodes, by the way, just to be really, really rude about this. And I was watching one of them just to see how good it was and realising, like, if for one scene, there was like 2-3 running gags all the way through it that you wouldn't have gotten in the first time through.
Oh, yeah. And there's ones that I'll realise years down the track after rewatching it, or I'll see something on Reddit and go, I never noticed that. Like, you know, there's all of these tiny little gags. It's
stuff. It's so dense with running gags, in jokes, callbacks. It's almost, I'm worried, excited to find out how alienating it would be to someone who hasn't seen it before. Because we are going to watch one episode from the first season, which is a good intro, and one episode from the second season, which is like 50% callbacks, running gags, ongoing plot lines. So I'm going to see how, because the issue is that by the time the third season, it was wildly successful with critics, with its small but very, very excited fan base. But the rest of the world didn't like it because, firstly, the humour it was doing wasn't everybody's tastes. And secondly, by that time, it basically was marinated in all these in-jokes that you couldn't really get a handle on it.
I have to push back on everyone's taste, though. I think there's a lot of juvenile humour in there, but there's also a lot of highbrow humour, and it's not your type of stuff. This came at an era where it was 2.5 Men and, Chuck Lorre stuff. So this is very different. We were talking about it before the mics were on, which Justin does not like. Stop talking about it.
I'm not going to say anything until the mics are on.
I first heard about this. There's a radio show I used to love called Get This with Tony Martin and Ed Cavalli, and they talked about this show, and they compared it to, shows like Curb Your Enthusiasm that used to, on Australian free-to-air, they'd get put on at midnight. They never got a chance to be showcased. They never got advertised or marketed or anything over here. So unless you just happen to be channel surfing at midnight,
or if you did like
on a weeknight,
or if you did like I did and learn about it because the internet loves this show and just had a friend, I think it was when I was at uni and everybody shared their shows, and so I just managed to get the entire season run, and it was, especially because it was a one-of-a-kind thing at the time. A lot of especially the mockumentary-style sitcoms. So I based a lot of the humour from this.
Yes.
But it was so one-of-a-kind when it was on the air.
You should go to more LAN parties if that's how you find out about cool shows.
No, I managed to get the show from it. I do plenty of cool shows. I just don't watch them.
Yeah. Okay, so, Jeanette, have you ever seen this?
No, I haven't.
You haven't heard this? Angus?
I mean, I know the name Arrested Development, but I've never seen an episode. I had no context as to what
And we know Lisa has seen
it. I've watched it many times.
And Baylor, have you seen
it? I don't think I have.
Mackenzie, have you watched it?
No.
She doesn't know anything about it. This is a show that Mackenzie will not enjoy. It's not, at least not enjoy until like she's in her teens.
Yeah, she's checked out of the conversation. Oh, one thing I didn't mention is the executive producer of this show is Ron Howard.
Who plays the narrator.
Who is the narrator. So there will be a bit of a, I know that voice. Yeah, it's Ron Howard narrating it. And when they first created it, I think they just, when they were making the pilot and trying to get it out there, they had him doing the narration because they were like, we'll just get somebody else to fill that blank in later. And they just couldn't fit anyone to fill in as good as him. So,
yeah.
Who's Ron Howard?
He's the guy with the perfect mustache.
in Happy Days, he was the main character.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah.
And then after Happy Days, he became, like, he's a producer, so he's produced lots of...
Oh, dear, there we go. We're going to have to do Happy Days now.
No, we're not. No.
I think you enjoyed this, is that there's one episode which is so
far... he's not who I thought he was either. Never mind.
Okay, I think he might...
Some old guy.
Ron Swanson?
Yeah.
Oh, that's no. Nick Offerman. That's Nick Offerman.
No.
But yeah.
Dude.
Oh. Yeah, there you go. Show him the picture.
Yeah. Does this help? This image?
He looks like every fisherman ever.
He looks like every cis white man I've ever seen just rolled into one man.
Yeah.
Golfing on Tuesdays, guys. Fishing on Sundays.
Yeah.
Family dinner on Friday nights. Be there or be square.
There you go. That's what he looked like with Henry Winkler back in the day on Happy Days. Don't know Happy Days?
Who's Henry Winkler?
The Fonz!
Oh, there you go. The one on the right.
Yeah.
The Fonz.
Yeah, anyway, I was going to say, Justin, you might enjoy this moment, is that one episode, it was so full of product placement, they named the episode after the Burger King burger they were promoting, as a kind of a subtle job of, this is very obvious product placement. And to make a joke that they were jumping the shark, they actually had, later in the episode, for plot reasons, pulled the shark out of her water and had it on a dock. And basically, at the end of the scene, it was like, okay, I need to go and do this thing. And so Henry Winkler, who played a lawyer, said, and I need to go to Burger King, jumps over the shark and goes out of the frame.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, they're walking on a jetty and he's like, jumps over the shark and then keeps walking. And
Happy Days
and
jumps the shark.
Is the series where the term jumps the shark comes from.
Have you heard of the term jump the shark?
You know the term
not
jump
particularly.
No? So when a TV show, quote unquote, jumps the shark, that's the moment, that's the actual thing that happens in the show where you go, oh, well, this show's gone to shit. And in Happy Days, there was an episode where
the Fonz
does like a water ski tournament and jumps over a shark in the water. And they say that is the moment in Happy Days where that show went to hell. And it jumped the shark.
Right.
So, yeah.
We actually have terminology for that nowadays.
Yeah, it's called Jump the Shark.
It's called M. Night Shyamalan.
Oh! That'd be a movie thing, wouldn't it?
It doesn't matter. If it's bad, it's bad. We just call it bad. We don't need euphemisms.
Yeah, but it's not a good thing turns bad. Like a person to Shyamalan where we didn't know enough of his stuff to think his first movie was good.
We used the term went to shit.
Yes. Yeah.
If we have to use a term.
Yeah.
So it was a season one episode and a season two episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the season one episode is a good intro to the characters without having a huge season's worth of baggage of in-jokes and running gags. The downside is it doesn't have all the characters. So I compensated it with having an episode from the second season where all the characters are there. It plays off. This is when the series is in its stride, so it's working brilliantly. But about half of the jokes are either in-jokes, running gags, or referencing previous episodes. So I'm worried it's going to alienate everybody else on the table. Mm-hmm. And or finding it hilarious that it will alienate everybody at the table, because that's the reason why it failed, because half the jokes are ones people don't get.
I'm not going to lie. I don't have faith in this, and I really hope my tune changes.
But you're not hilarious.
I'm not sold it. I'm not sold it well.
I'm not sold on
it. It's a thing. I'm talking about it, not actually explaining the jokes.
I know, but I looked up images of it, and normally, like, if I find images that I think look okay, I'll give it a go sort of thing.
But it doesn't do it.
Yeah, like a poster. Yeah, if a poster can't sell you, then what's the point of going?
I'm very well aware I'm not selling the show. You'll have to watch it for yourself.
It looked very sitcom-y.
It's a sitcom, but it subverts the normal expectations of a sitcom. Before you guys got here tonight, I was explaining when I first found the show on Free to Air, it was a particular episode where it's a funeral, but I think Job's turning it into like a magic trick or something.
Yeah.
And I ended up, I had no idea who these people were, I had no idea what was going on, but I couldn't breathe. I was laughing so hard. And I'm like, and Andrew's come in, he's going, what's going on? And I'm like, I don't know what's going on, but it's so funny. Like, it's just insane.
So I'm hoping
that was the episode you were going to do. But
I mean, almost. It's almost as ridiculous. I was tempted to go for the episode after it, but no, I was like, I need to, so many good episodes from that little stretch of the show that I was tempted to, not do that one, but the one a bit before it. Yeah, so I almost satisfied with the choices, but if not, I can just say I made a huge mistake.
I honestly thought that this was the Chris Pratt show that...
No,
that's Parks and Rec.
That's,
yeah, that one. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I mean,
that was awful.
I like Parks and Rec. It grew on me, though.
Would.
You have to get past the second season, and then as soon as Adam Scott and Rob Lowe arrive, then it gets in its stride. So.
Yeah, okay, so I tried that with B5, just getting to the second season.
This is not it's Babylon not 5.
It's
this
not going to happen.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be B5. Like, shows have got this, like, if they don't grab you, they don't grab you.
Yeah, but the first six episodes, which is the first season of Parks and Rec, was absolutely horrible.
It was trying to be The Office.
Yeah, and it failed. So you have to avoid the first season. I have it on DVD solely because I got it in the box set. That's the only reason why I have it on DVD. Anyway,
sorry. I guess I'm not doing Parks and Rec for my choice. Then.
Well, no. Well, also because it started in like 2012.
Oh yeah. No.
Okay, so I guess we'll find out what people think.
Yeah. And, so for those playing along at home, the episodes we're watching are season 1, episode 6, Visiting Hours, and season 2, episode 2, the one where they build a house. I think that's what it's called. Yeah, the one.
Who's your favourite character?
Okay, oh, no. I'm out of favourites.
Yeah, none of them know. Okay. I want to have this conversation.
Yeah, yeah. I'm out of favourites. B, they're like 12 characters.
I'm just hoping you picked a good episode with some good Lucille.
I unfortunately didn't pick anyone with Lucille 2, and I'm sorry.
Oh, no, not Lucille 2, Lucille. Like the
Lucille, no, it doesn't have that plot line. I'm sorry. I was like, this close to the good one, but no, I'm sorry.
It's hard.
Yeah.
But yeah, hopefully we can win everyone over because it's a good show.
Jeanette's got her finger on the button.
Yeah, she's like,
stop talking.
Shut up.
We just watched the damn episode.
We're waiting for the little swirly finger thing.
Swirl it.
The finger is swirling.
Stop talking.
On with the show. And that was Arrested Development. We watched 2 episodes.
Yeah, because I wasn't sure whether they'd work separately, so...
Finally, Alex has a Quantum Leap episode, you know?
No, I don't think so.
I
knew it would be fine. You were nervous, but I knew I knew it would be a hit.
It was fun. It was lots of fun.
Yeah. Oh, then again, if it turned early, I would have just said I've made a huge mistake.
So, Jeanette, you watched it for the first time. What did you think of it?
It was fun. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Okay, Angus, what did you think?
I actually really enjoyed it, and I did enjoy both episodes. I didn't think it was so off-putting and disconnected that it was...
You didn't lose stuff by not knowing the backstory.
They relatively covered everything. I genuinely quite enjoyed it. I thought they were both hilarious episodes. So
that's probably the loudest I've heard you laugh.
When I laugh, I do laugh loudly.
I'm a loud laugher. Yeah. Loud laughing's good. But I think everyone's happy when I can hear how loud Angus is laughing. And
that was 4 a.m. Angus laughter. It's not really acceptable.
Okay, we're still going through the virgins. Baylor?
It was good. Yeah, I enjoyed it. It's not something that I'd probably sit down and actively watch. But if it was on in the background, I would not be adverse to it.
Which is a big change from what Baylor was saying.
Yeah,
I entered that wanting it. But no, it was good.
Yeah.
And you were quite right about the faces that we would recognise. I think I did recognise pretty much everyone in there. Because even the twin sister I recognised from a show Baylor introduced me to, which was an invention show.
Better Off Ted. Yeah, Portia.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, I've always wanted to watch that.
I really like Portia. She's just absolutely stunning and so hilariously disconnected.
I think the niece was the only person I didn't recognise.
Yeah, and she's on it. There's a show called Search Party that's had lots of really good raves about it. Yeah. I watched a little bit of it, and it's like a bit of a murder mystery thing, but that was a big hit a few years ago. So, and I think lots of indie films and things like that.
But no, she was the only person I didn't immediately go, oh yeah, I know who that is. I think the mother as well, the grandmother.
She's got pedigree. She was in was it Play Misty for Me? And a lot of those old... Yeah.
Familiar, but I
think... She goes back. She was an actress in the 70s and stuff. She's a career actress. And this was one of her, not last roles, but
it would have been the last role because...
she passed away recently. But this was kind of a bit of a comeback thing for her. But I think she was always on the stage, or she was, you know, always doing stuff, but just not a big name until from the 70s until when this came out.
Yeah, I didn't recognise anyone.
Yeah, you don't watch American TV.
Yeah.
Whereas I recognised a fair few of them, but not all of them, by any stretch. I sort of agreed with Baylor that there were definite moments in there. It was really quite funny, some of those bits. The guy running up the back of the thing.
Oh, yes, I love that. That was so
good. The escape route over the back.
The kid in the truck when he looks up and sees the other truck in morgue or corner or something written on it.
It's just lots of really funny stuff. I don't think I would go out of my way to watch it, but if it was on, I would certainly, I wouldn't mind.
And there's lots of little things that you kind of, you pick stuff up. Yeah. I didn't pick up about the hair. It's like, you know, that first episode where George is like saying to George Michael, I want your hair. And it's like, and you're going, because remember what happens. And so then because George's twin brother, Oscar, looks exactly like him, but with hair, that's how he ends up escaping from prison. He puts on a wig and pretends he's his brother and then walks out. And
then, of course, there's an own gag. Like the episode before this, every time is the first time we see Oscar. And every time we see Oscar, because George had just escaped from prison, the police come and attack him and go, because they think he's George. So this episode, the police in Mexico think he's Oscar. Yeah, it's a thing. Like, it's something like half a dozen running gags and so on in there as well.
And there's like this innuendo, but it's never quite said, that Oscar believes that Buster is his son from the affair that they had. So then he kept kind of going, yes, I know all about your birth. You know,
and it becomes a recurring thing. And episodes like Buster going, why isn't my father here? And I was going, maybe he is. Just the weirdest running gags at some points.
I thought the secondary characters were quite good too. I mean, the pair doing their marriage counseling and then going on to doing the open marriage.
Yeah, that's a thing. Like, roughly half of Tobias's characterization is he's gay and doesn't know it. Yeah. So roughly half of the jokes he tells are basically like, no, please.
Yeah, but the problem I have with it is that these sorts of jokes have put such negative connotations on going to psychs and getting marriage counselling and that sort of thing, that, like, when a marriage is failing, let's just open up the relationship and stuff. And so it plays into those perpetual stereotypes of...
There's quite a few episodes in between the first one and the second one that we watch, and it's... They decide to open their relationship because they're basically narcissists, and the motives behind it, I think by the time we get into the episode, it's like they've already made the decision, but the motives are basically they've decided they want to get back at each other. They kind of do it as a revenge reason because they're just horrible human beings.
That is my big issue with it, is because there's so much tension around that specific topic that I'm like, it's probably the only thing I personally didn't vibe, but
It's weird because I was trying to pick out an episode from, like, a run of this first part of the second season has basically a whole bunch of good episodes in a row, and I was trying to work out which one was the good one, and it's a bit awkward.
And I think that's one thing that I said before we started watching it, was just don't feel sorry for any of the characters in this, because even when you start to sympathise with them, they're all really horrible, trash human beings.
It's definitely like a 90s vibe TV show where, like, the jokes still fit within that era of being...
That's right. Yes. That's true.
Slightly on the nose. And
it's a lot
like
worse jokes. Like, in one episode, Lindsay comes up to maybe while she's at school, but she, for plot reasons, has a hoarse voice. Steve Holt basically was trying to was he trying to hit on Lindsay, or did Lindsay just think he was hitting on
Lindsay just thinks everyone's hitting on her, and she's so she was like full flirting with this teenage boy, high school boy, that maybe he's got a crush on.
And basically because of that, Steve Holt's like, that's your mum, and because of plot reasons I don't even remember, maybe he just lies and says no, he's my dad, he's trans, and making fun of that in the most obnoxious way possible. That was like, no, that's... And, like, roughly, again, there's, like, half the characterization of Tobias is he's gay and doesn't know it. And there's so much homophobia flowing through the episodes, which we managed to miss completely in this episode.
I mean, there were good episodes regardless. It's just very interesting to see that side of things.
But, yeah, there's a lot of the early 2000s we're being edgy. For example, it's one episode where Job's girlfriend at the time is Spanish language TV star, and they go to an awards ceremony, and Lucille Bluth assumes that every single Latino man in a tuxedo there has to be a waiter.
But she is just that is who she is. She's horrible,
and B, it's the Durga,
she's just the worst.
And the Durga is somewhat framed as we're making fun of her rather than the racism, but still.
Yeah. I assume that was the case because she did come out with cold, hard racism immediately when, like, a person of colour tried to hand her a drink.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And she just threw down the, if I wanted something as dirty as you.
Oh, no, yeah. I don't even think it was, I think it was just classism. It's just like, if I wanted
Yeah, there's a lot of,
I didn't even realize they were
a person of colour.
I
saw the thumb resting upon the top of the.
And I was okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of racism against people from Latin America throughout the show.
Yeah, and I imagine it's taking the mickey out of her and her classism and stuff. But at the same time, I mean,
It feels wrong. It's one of those early noughties, we're making a racist joke, and we're probably finding a racist person, ha-ha, style of joke, and it sometimes lands. Yeah, but
if you don't have... This is my issue, right, with people doing that, is immediately you're creating a safe space for the idiots that are racist, going, I love Arrested Development because they share the same views as me. And a smart person will go... No, they're making fun of it. And they'll go, no, they're actually affirming my beliefs. And you can't turn around to that person and clearly explain why Arrested Development is making fun of it and being racist is wrong. Because it, it creates that safe space for them.
And whether that's not caught in the context of the show, though, but she... is definitely not someone anyone aspires to because she is just the worst. Like, it's very clear, even from the very first, when they introduce her, don't they? One of the things that happens is she goes, I'd never choose between my children, and then it's showing a cutaway with her going, oh, I don't care for Job. You know, and it's just like, she's just a horrible mother, she's a horrible person, and it's just, and that makes it clear through the whole thing. She just shits on everybody. Man. She's, oh, I know, another swear jar, sorry.
Into the jar.
I'm glad Mackenzie's here to keep you straight. She doesn't call Angus out or anything.
No, it's just me.
She'll call you.
I swear on this shit all about it.
Are you going to make him put some money in the coin jar? I think you should.
I think we should bring the coin jar. Yes. Does it stand today, you know?
I think there probably is, there's definitely things that wouldn't stand today 20 years later. Because, 20 years, especially the Charlize Theron story.
Oh yeah, that's terrible.
It's not great. So Michael meets this girl in Little Britain, the British part of town, and have this really lovely relationship. And she is your typical manic pixie dream girl. She's really whimsical and has funny hats and funny handbags, and she's very cute.
There's also the implication that she's secretly a spy, listening on the Blue Company stuff. But
they work out she's actually has an intellectual disability. So meanwhile, she's got this uncle that keeps following around going, what are you doing? That's my niece, you know? And it's like, oh, is he one of the spies? Is he the... And it's like, no. Yeah, she's actually got an intellectual disability, and it's really highly appropriate for you to be having a relationship with this woman. Yeah. So it's like, and you kind of go,
it's
not good. Once you realise, and then you go back and watch the episodes, it all makes sense, but you go, oh, no. This is yuck.
It
feels very predatory when you go back and rewatch it.
And it's also not exactly friendly towards disabled people in the first place. I mean, it's not... actively ableist, but it's definitely they're not using the right terminology.
It's 100%.
Yeah, it is. I tie that.
Glasses on, glasses off. It's like.
Yeah. Oh, it's not. Okay, it is. It's the ableist.
It's ableist.
Yes. I think Job does that with every single relationship that he's with, isn't he? And he even has the
Spanish language soap star.
The telenova star, and treats her like dirt as well. Until she comes to her senses and leaves him, and then suddenly he's in love, and it's just like he just treats everyone like dirt. But and every character does. Yeah. I can't think of a character on that show that doesn't treat someone like dirt.
Because George Michael Poy, the only person doesn't do that until the Netflix adaptation of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was the Netflix, season 4 anyway. Yeah.
It's more just he's too meek to do anything terrible. Yes.
I think it's one of those shows that can hold up today and still hold its own. But you need to be educated before going in. You need to know.
And basically the generic disclaimer for anything made from like 97 to 2010 is they're going to do the edgy joke bits.
And
you know what? And they rebooted and made newer versions and they did not hold up. So, look, that could have nothing to do with the fact that times have changed, but it could just be, I don't know, but I don't feel like they're held up.
I don't think that you could write this stuff now, but I think that they, you can... There's a group of people that's definitely got an appreciation for the old stuff.
Yeah.
The thing is, there are a whole bunch of decent jokes in there that are fine and you could write that style of thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just with those negatives in there, it really just sours the pot.
There's like a lot of appreciation for Charlie Chaplin jokes as well through that. They did one of his first jokes with the building falling down and stuff.
Isn't that a Buster Keaton joke? And the character's name's Buster that it happened to.
That's
a Charlie Chaplin joke.
No, it's Buster Keaton.
Buster Keaton.
Is it?
Yeah. But it's all that same era, that same slapstick type stuff.
Yeah. Okay, there you go. So that's a reference, straight reference.
Also, I was saying in the intro that that style of comedy didn't exist at the time, but do you think that because of all the laugh trackless comedies we've got now, that that side of the format holds up? It's not fold up, but like, does it still feel special now? Is it basically... It's good jokes in a format that was unique at the time, but not now.
Yes, and it was, that it was a sitcom in a time when you didn't really have sitcoms without laugh tracks, didn't you?
Didn't
go for the narrator.
I'm not a fan of the Ron Howard.
Look, I am currently playing Baldur's Gate 3, and that has got a narrator through it, and it is like sexy British ASMR. Right? And it just... goes for it and will do it really nicely, and it doesn't feel abrupt, coarse, and telling me things I already know because I just watched the scene and I know how to get the context from the next scene. I'm not an idiot. This show is definitely catering towards...
That's the thing. Just,
people that struggle to follow, I guess, but it's very tell and less show in a way.
And
but
it made it interesting.
It is something. You described it as being difficult to follow, but I found it very easy to follow.
And because the narrator would then, if there were any callbacks, it would quickly recap them and then move on.
Yes, it would recap them and move on.
There was a few things that were kind of things that happened previous episodes, like the corn baller thing, which you wouldn't have got if they hadn't have shown that little snippet.
Yeah. It's not that it was hard to follow, it was just... It was very abrupt.
It was just abrupt, and I didn't enjoy it. It was short attention span stuff.
It probably was early. And that's the thing, because like the corn baller has basically got an entire arc almost in the series. So it's kind of weird to just have that little bit and then go, oh, okay. And trying to point out the significance of it more than it actually was.
Because
the corn baller is basically just a crappy deep fryer that George tried to sell.
But it burnt everyone who used it.
And this is the climax of Oscar thinking someone's going to hurt themselves and grabbing the entire thing and having his fingernails burn off.
Forgot about that.
Yeah, and fingernails burn off. And because he loses his hair, people think he's George and put him in prison.
I forgot about that.
So it's basically just like bits and... From the point of view of someone who watches the show, I'm thinking of bits and pieces here. Where it's like, here's the running gag, here's the entire time. And that's part of the appeal of the series, which is really hard to convey in two episodes. How, basically, I would think of it as having a huge vocab that you can basically beat somebody over the head with in terms of in-gags and running gags and in-jokes and entire plot lines.
It's definitely not something that you see nowadays as much, I don't think. Especially with slapstick comedy as well. Like, no one pays homage to the greats as well as that show did, I think. Because it was just blatantly...
Mm-hmm.
Here's a physical gag. Enjoy. Sort of thing. I haven't seen any new stuff that really does that.
Yeah, that's the thing. I was just saying, like, it does every style of comedy because it can.
Yeah, and the only stuff that does that kind of comedy is animated TV shows.
Yeah.
Like, Lower Decks definitely does that. It pays homage to all the previous Star Trek shows and stuff like that, to the point that that might come close to it, but it's still not live action.
And it's also, Lower Decks also has a huge backlog of funny references to previous Star Trek
movies.
Which I'm sure alienates people just as much as... Actually, no. This didn't alienate anybody, but like I'm sure that Lower Decks would alienate people more than if they joined in on third season of Arrested Development and not having the context for a lot of the things.
I think you could still kind of slowly piece it together by the end of it.
I think so.
Are we ready for food groups?
I regret being a reviewer. You see, I didn't mind it, but I feel like there's kind of that looming... sense of other things that we didn't necessarily see.
Yeah, there's a lot of homophobia in the series that we just avoided completely.
Yeah, so I don't know. I want to pick a food that you kind of, you'll eat and you go, yeah, that's decent now, but then you'll know that you'll be in trouble later on if you keep going.
You should pick a food that you've been suggested to by a queer ally because they've guided you through all the terrible stuff, because that's what I think it feels like.
I don't know if I've got any foods like that.
It's probably not overly healthy.
Yeah, something that you can eat too much of.
What's the name of that hamburger joint from Happy Days?
Owls?
Owls? Yeah, maybe it's an Owls hamburger.
Because it's aged terribly.
It's aged terribly.
Nah. Like frozen banana.
Oh, yeah. Because they have a frozen banana stand on the boardwalk in the city that it's set, which we didn't see either.
Yeah, that's a reference for an episode we didn't watch.
What about deep fried banana? Banana or barbecue banana?
Popcorn chicken?
No, I could eat a lot of that.
Popcorn tofu, maybe.
Yeah, okay. I don't know. No, that's too kind of, I don't know.
That's too highbrow, actually.
Yeah, I think it's too highbrow. Yeah.
I think this would be something really, really tragic and lowbrow, just like...
Onion rings?
Onion rings is one of that, where you're like, yeah, these are okay, I could eat these, and then you've eaten like 100, and you're like, yeah, no, I can't.
Yeah.
Just like KFC, you know, you love it when you're eating it, and then a few hours later, you're like, oh, why did I eat that? I always feel sick when I eat it.
Yeah, something like that.
It's fast food.
Fast food chicken.
Mm-hmm.
Disagrees with everyone eventually.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I guess, what's the next episode?
Sailor Moon.
Sailor Moon.
Moon's next. Yep.
Got some anime.
Yeah.
Got Sailor Moon. Yes. Kenji will join in for that episode.
Next month we'll be doing it. But we should have a guest speaker, Ashley. She's a really good friend of mine. One of my best friends, you could almost say.
Yeah.
And she is a mad Sailor Mooner. She's threatening to dress up and everything.
Oh, wonderful.
Hey, look, I don't want to, you know, I'm sure Ashley is a really good friend of yours, but who's that person who you refuse to introduce me to who listens to our program that...
Oh, Luke?
Luke. Big shout out to Luke.
Yeah, shout out to Luke.
Who I will never meet, but apparently listens.
Hi,
Luke. Who is the Classic Cult TV Club's Jamie Lee Curtis, apparently.
I got a new person as well recently. My mother started listening to one episode. Nice. She probably won't hear this. So she's not getting a shout out. But shout out to Linton, my stepdad, who started listening to it.
Yes.
They live in Aldinga, so this is a big thing. They're nowhere near Gawler. Now I'll just tell them that they've got a shout out and they have to listen to all the episodes.
Find out which one.
Yeah.
And then just don't tell Baylor when you edit it out of the episode. That's in there. I remember saying it.
And the best part is, I will not listen to this.
I was just thinking that. You are one person who was like, I will never listen to these episodes. And yet... Everyone around you listens to it except for you.
I feel like if I listen to it, I'm going to hear how dumb and just terrible I sound. I'm like...
No, that's my job.
No choice.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't listen to them if I had a choice.
Listen to everyone, every sentence, every line.
The editor. Over.
And that was the Cult TV Club. And I guess we'll say goodbye. See you later, guys.
Bye.